Hello everyone, Stan Gill here. Welcome to the Hollywood South Blacklist. This is show number 6 and was originally recorded on Friday, October 12, 2012. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, send us an email to podcast@thehollywoodsouthblog.com. And be sure to stop by the website to take a look around. Enjoy. Well, hello everybody, Stan Gill here, and this is the Hollywood South Blacklist, where we discuss all things Hollywood South, a filmmaker's paradise. On this show, we'll have your listener email. Hollywood is Dying is going to take a hiatus, and as promised, I'll talk about the indie film scene, crowdfunding, script selection as a producer-filmmaker. We'll talk about the NOLA Film Festival that has kicked off, and I'll have my book recommendation and software recommendation. First off, listener email. Jim A. writes, I left New York to come to New Orleans. Love it here. Love the podcast. Thank you, Jim. Michael P. says, need more indie scene podcast. Well, what do you know? This is the one. And Angela D. writes, I just enrolled in film school. How did you get your start? Boy, when I read that, I had to think back and figure out, how did I get my start? I guess over the years, I sort of taken certain things for granted in my career, and others have been very thankful that I was able to participate. But I started off out of New Orleans, went to LSU for a couple of years, worked in the TV studio there as a student job, and I was putting in 40 plus hours a week at that job, only getting paid 20. One of the staff there, one of my bosses, if you will, he said to me, what you really need to do is apply to film school. So I applied to every film school I could think of, NYU, UCLA, USC, a couple others. And then I applied to a small college in Hollywood called Columbia College Hollywood. And out of all of them, I got rejected. UCLA said, yeah, come on out. We'll take your money, but then you can reapply for another year. And Columbia College was the one that had accepted me. So I came to LA and started then. And within about 9 months of school, I got a job in the industry working in post-production. I'll save that story for another day because it was quite funny how that first job worked out. Worked in post-production, ended up in production because what I really wanted to do was be a cameraman. Spent a lot of time shooting projects, a lot starting off on 16mm film and 35mm film. And as time went on, did more post-production and more production, and next thing you know, it starts leading into a position of being a producer. And it's worked out quite well. Some things I wished I could have forgotten, but for a vast majority of my career, I'm quite happy with it. Hollywood is Dying. I'm going to put that on hiatus for this show, and we're going to talk about our film scene, our indie film scene. Talk about crowdfunding. We'll talk about script selection as a producer, filmmaker. That's usually the first thing you have to do if you want to be an independent filmmaker is selecting your first script. One of my favorite quotes of all time comes from William Goldman out of his book, Adventures in the Screen Trade. And his quote is, nobody knows anything. That quote is very famous in Hollywood, or infamous, depending on how you look at it. William Goldman, which most people don't even know who he is unless you're a screenwriter or unless you pretty good with Hollywood history. He wrote a book called Adventures in the Screen Trade. He happened to win an Oscar for Best Writing, Story, and Screenplay for Butch Cassidy and Sundance Kid, 1969. He also won an Oscar for Best Writing, Screenplay, based on material from another medium for All the President's Men, 1976. If you want to read good script writing, get those two scripts and read that, whether you're a producer, a filmmaker, or a screenwriter, or an aspiring screenwriter. That guy has got a lot of good advice in that book, but that's one of my favorite quotes. Nobody knows anything. How did I tie that into the film scene, into the indie film scene? The reason I tie that in is you will get people who say, well, this is the standard way of doing things in Hollywood, or this is the standard, or this is how it's done. and you instantly know that you're talking to an idiot. I know, because I'm an idiot. Well, sometimes. Most of the time, I'm not. Nobody knows anything. If you read that book, or at least read the first few chapters of William Goldman's Adventures in the Screen Trade, you'll get an idea as time goes on that here's a guy that won two Oscars, and when he wrote the script for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid, he really didn't know what he was doing. He was a writer, and he concentrated on writing, and he basically just got shrugged off by anybody else. A writer, who are you? We're filmmakers, we're actors, we're directors, we're camera people. He didn't know anything about the filmmaking process and realized shortly afterwards that a lot of people that he worked with didn't know either. I like that quote, "Nobody knows anything," which a lot of times that quote is misquoted as, "Nobody knows nothing." And it's nobody knows anything. Slight difference, but nobody knows anything. And William Goldman said that in his book to describe about how projects are selected, how a studio or how producers will select a project and determine whether or not that they want to produce the film, or a studio wants to produce a film, or how a film is going to do at the box office, is going to do good, is going to do bad. And he realized over his career that nobody knows anything, which is true. And you try to do the best you can as a producer or an executive at a studio or a creative or a non-creative in doing your job. Now, a lot of times, some of the famous mistakes that are made in Hollywood. For instance, one of the most famous ones is turning down Spielberg for making E.T. Eminem's being turned down for product tie-in, product placement in E.T. over Reese's because they didn't want their candy eaten by an alien. Things like that. You look back on it like, who was the idiot that pulled the trigger on that? If you weren't sitting in the person's chair, you may never know what the decisions were made in determining that. And going back to William Goldman's quote, "Nobody knows anything," it's always easy to second guess. Remember, on Monday, you can always second guess the Saints and their plays and what they've done on the field, or the Hornets and, you know, who was put in the game and who wasn't. It's real easy to do it after it is completed. After you do a film, if your film tanks or you lose money for your investors, or it does quite well, you can always justify your excuses or your commentary based upon how the film is done. So if the film tanks, it's easy for someone to say, "Well, I knew it was going to tank." Or if it did great, you say, "Well, I knew that was going to be a hit." I would say, at least in my career, and I can only speak from my standpoint, every person I've ever spoken with that had outstanding success in any project they ever did, inevitably you ask them the question, did anybody know? Because you sort of want that secret sauce. Okay, if this person knew that that was going to be a success, maybe if I find out what secret sauce they're using, I can do the same thing. 100.0% of the time, everybody says nobody had a clue. We did the best script we could. We acted the best we could. We shot it. We edited it. We did this. And the next thing you know, we're winning awards. Next thing you know, this person goes on to get hired on another project that does so much better, but they were found in this script or in this film, if you will. Which brings me to the topic of script selection as a filmmaker. Now, I'm not necessarily going to talk about the studio system and how the meat grinder goes through and selects whatever script is going to be made, because that is specifically a system. It's a bubble. There are certain ways to get inside that bubble. I'm not necessarily going to address that, because as an indie filmmaker, indie producer, you're not going to get into that bubble unless you create something that somebody wants a part of. Some agent, some executive or something sees something that you did and they say, "Hey, I want to tap into that creativity," or "I want to tap into that." Maybe you get a call, you get a flight out to Hollywood, you meet some agents and you make a deal. And for 3 years, you go round and round in the studio system. And when you come out, you feel like that you went through a washing machine that was full of rocks, if you will. And the first thing you're going to do as an indie filmmaker is script selection. Most of the time, it's a script that you've written. I'm not saying all the time, but most of the time, you've written a script and you say, I want to get this made. The thing about screenwriting is that a lot of people, if you ask screenwriters today, a lot of my friends who are screenwriters, When they first started off, they never envisioned themselves becoming screenwriters. One way or another, they happened to stumble into it or got curious and started writing material, or they wrote in another medium. Say they were a copywriter, they wrote ads and copy material for commercial spots or advertisements or whatever, and they just got bored, so they started creative writing short stories. In fact, that's how I started off. I started off writing short stories. I never had any intention of writing scripts. I just wanted to write short stories and think, that's something that I could either hire a screenwriter or find a screenwriter who would want to turn that into a screenplay. And as time went on, I developed my screenwriting skills off of those short stories I created. So for me personally, I create a short story first before I jump into the screenplay. If you're an indie filmmaker and you don't start off with a script that you wrote, you have somebody else that you've run into, either somebody who's a director or producer or wants to be a director, producer, or an actor who wrote a screenplay and they want to star in it and they don't know how to produce it or shoot it or whatever, but they're bringing the creative to the table, if you will. And so you look at it, and the first thing that you have to look at is how are you going to evaluate it? Because it doesn't matter, in my opinion, it does not matter about whether somebody comes to you and says, hey, will you produce my film? In my professional case, if somebody approaches me and says, will you produce my film? The first thing I ask them is to give me a rundown, a log line of what their film is about. Usually within 5 minutes, you can tell whether it's something that you want to do. Until you get to the level where you're a producer or director and you're being paid $1, $2, $3, $5, $10 million to direct a project, and you have the opportunity to say no, generally speaking, you're going to look at a story, and I'm not saying this is everybody, because there are a lot of people who don't need to make films for the rest of their lives because they get paid more than enough, or they've made more than enough money and they don't have to. And as an indie filmmaker, indie producer, that's what you're going to be looking at. Is this a story that I want to get involved with to try to produce? Now, the latest craze are these zombie films. And had I known zombie films would have been so popular when I did, I just don't know how many of them that I did back in the 80s, low-budget hack'em slash'em zombie, you know, horror movies that to this day, I don't even know where they're at. They were probably sold in some foreign country and have been dubbed over in some foreign language that I'll never know. Had I known it was that popular back then, maybe I would have stayed on that route. That seems to be the case today. As a producer and any filmmaker, the first thing that comes to mind for me is makeup and prosthetics, because you can get, you know, 100 people that said, hey, you want to come be a background actor in my film and be a zombie? You could probably get 100 people say, oh, that would be so cool to act in a movie and I get to be a zombie. Now you have to make up 100 people. You have makeup supplies. You have to have a special effects makeup artist to be able to do that, and a numerous amount of assistants to work with that, because they have to put those people in makeup. And of course, gallons and gallons of Karo syrup and red dye number 5, which generally speaking is blood, stage blood. Now, as a producer, I'm looking at that, and it's the first thing that comes to my mind. One, does the story grab me? And two, I got to think about it. I'm going to put a lot of money in makeup and prosthetics. If you're an indie filmmaker, an indie producer who's just starting off and you want to get something done, first thing first, don't do a feature film. That's my advice. Are there people, indie filmmakers, that their first project right out of the gate is a feature film and they do quite well or they get it done? Oh, sure, absolutely. Very small percentage of them make any money or get any money returned for your investors. The people actually put the money up to get the film done. And at the end of the day, like I said earlier, I'm speaking specifically to indie film producers and indie filmmakers who haven't done their first project or trying to figure out how to do their first project. My recommendation is don't do a feature film. Do at least 3 to 6, a half dozen short projects. And when I say short projects, I mean nothing over 10 minutes. Okay, 11 minutes, 9 minutes, whatever. Aim for that. A feature reel is about 20 minutes in a screening of a film. So do a half reeler. If you try to bite off a feature film, in my opinion, you're going to spend years working on it. Granted, are there people who take first-time filmmakers that take a script and turn it into a feature film and after a couple of years get it done and get it completed into a cut? Yes, they do. A very, very small percentage of those are going to make their money back or even recoup their money for their investors. And what you want to be able to do is if you're going to produce a short, you want to be able to at least make some money off of it. Or if you're not going to make any money at all and it's going to be a proof of concept or a calling card, a lot of people call them trailers for a film that they want to do, then you're going to be coming out of pocket to do that. You're going to create a partnership with a bunch of other people, the actor, the director, the producer, unless, of course, you're going to be the producer, director, actor, but somebody's got to hold the camera and somebody has to hold the microphone. Somebody has to do the makeup, right? If you're going to do that, then everybody's going to be able to put in their amount of money and their time and effort or their sweat equity in the project. So my advice is when you select your script, the first thing you do is do a short film. Don't do a feature film because you will end up losing your investors' money or Aunt May's money who took a second mortgage out on their house because she knew you were going to be the best filmmaker in the world and the next Spielberg, the next Catherine Bigelow, and she wanted you to make the film. Next thing you know, you make the film and you can't get it sold and now she has to pay on that mortgage. And how are you going to pay that mortgage? You have to end up getting a second job to pay off that second loan. And the story I just told you happens all the time. It will continue to happen because you can always find fans in your families and friends, right? Your families, if you've got multiple families, you're always going to be able to find fans within your circle of friends and family. They're going to think that Bobby was always smart and he loved filmmaking and we just know he's going to make it. And so we're going to try to put some money into this project. My opinion as a professional producer, never ever take money from family or friends to invest in a film. I've had several projects along the way in my career where I've had friends say that they've wanted to invest in the project. And I said, no, you don't want to invest in the project. It's not that I think that something's going to go wrong. It's that I have to plan for something going wrong and try to correct that so that I can at least get your investment back. But if you can't get your investment back, then there's not going to be a friendship and you're going to blame me for the rest of your life for making the investment. Those stories you hear all the time. In fact, you hear people make films and cheat people out of money. What I'm talking about is I don't want to get into the Hollywood folklore or anything like that. I want to talk about, as an indie filmmaker, your first project out of the gate, and my suggestion is don't do a feature film, do a short project. You're going to write about 15 pages, whether it's you or a screenwriter, and the first thing you're going to look at is, why do you want to make this script into a project? Okay. Is it a trailer for a feature you want to do? Most of the time, about 9 out of 10 times it is. For instance, if you have a feature script, and you want to make that into a feature film, but you don't have the money and you can't figure out how to raise the money, and we'll talk about crowdsourcing a little later, you're going to want to try to shoot a trailer. I don't know how many friends I have in Hollywood that have multiple scripts on their desks and they want to turn them into feature films. They can't find the money, can't find a way of getting them produced, and they ask me, what should I do? Well, first thing you're going to do is create a trailer. So then they get somebody who's going to act in it, and they compile all this together, and within 6 months, they're able to produce a short trailer and try to cut it together. And at the end of that trailer, you look at it, and you realize, I have no clue what your film is about. And going through that process of trying to create that short trailer, as the investors like to call it, proof of concept. In the business world, they call them proof of concepts, and the filmmaking world, we call them trailers. You're going to see a 5-minute, 7-8 minute short film on a scene, if you will, or a rewritten script that has been adapted from your screenplay into a short film, like I said, about 10 minutes. Don't do anything longer because you will end up spending so much time and effort and energy in making something longer. And in my opinion, if you're looking for investors to invest in your feature film, go for 7 to 10 minute type reel. I don't call those trailers. A trailer is about 2-2.5 minutes. A teaser is about 60 seconds or less. If you're going to create a short proof of concept trailer for your film, do a short scene. Either take a scene out of your film that you think is great, Or, like I would suggest, is take your screenplay and have it adapted into a 7 to 10 minute short. So you're not taking just one scene. For instance, you have multiple characters, and in this one scene, your lead character and his love interest have a dialogue scene. And you can shoot that dialogue scene at a cafe or in a bedroom or in a backyard or whatever. And an investor may look at that and say, okay, I'm seeing two people talking on the screen. I'm not saying you have to go out and do all these special effects and car explosions and gunshots or anything like that, though that may help you. The amount of money and effort you're going to put into it is what's key. Remember now, I'm thinking as an indie filmmaker, I've got a feature script that I want to produce. I can't find the money to get it produced, so I want to produce a trailer. Don't think trailer, think short scene. Don't think pulling a scene out of your script. Think adapting your script into about 7 to 10 minutes. And I'm not saying take your script from beginning to end, fade up to fade out, and crushing it into 7 to 10 minutes. I'm talking about creating a 7 to 10 minute reel that when you polish it and you put it together and you look at it, you can show it to a prospective investor or investment group, which is you're going to be looking at, and say, this is our proof of concept of this feature that we want to do. This is what we're showing. This is the quality of material that we're able to present. And a lot of investors may not be story savvy. They may look at it and just say, wow, this is great. I want to get a piece of this. I want to be in on this. Are they going to be able to write you a check for your entire project? Generally speaking, no. You're going to have multiple people who become your executive producers, your business partners, put into your project. My advice is when you're looking at these scripts, figure out something that you can get produced. If it is car chases and gunshots and special effects and all this, yes, there are cheaper tools out there today, special effects software, or you may have a buddy who does special effects, computer-generated imagery or things like that. You're going to bite off more than you can chew, and the project will never get completed. You'll have people fall out. Your cameraman gets tired because he's eaten up his last 20 weekends shooting this project, and nothing's going anywhere because you're working during the day and coming home at night editing these projects together. And nobody's going to be happy if you can't get it finished. It doesn't matter whether you've got it halfway finished. Until you get it finished, wrapped up, and be able to have some kind of screening in your living room, or let's say you rent out a theater and you invite all your family and friends to come by and watch your 10-minute reel and have a little party, that's great because you can entertain prospective producers or prospective investors that want to invest in your project. Is this the number one way to get your film or get your script produced? No. I still remember to this day, a long time ago, of a convention I went to where there was a filmmaking guru. I've talked about this before in another podcast. His seminar was about finding money for your projects. And he got about halfway into his presentation. Some guy stood up in the back and yelled, "Where do we go to get the money?" And he said, from your Uncle Joe or for your Aunt May or whatever. And the guy got so upset, he just stormed out of the room and slammed the door. Everybody just, wow, what was that all about? And he said, that's basically what happens. No bank is going to, unless, of course, you want to sign your house over, no bank is going to give you money to produce your first project as an independent filmmaker. So you're stuck. How do I get this project made? The first half of the equation is looking at the script. Is it a story that catches you? Is it a story that you think, God, I really would love to get this produced as a film? Are you going to be the actor director, which I highly recommend that you don't do? Have people directed and acted and gone on to great things? Yes, they have. I'm trying to find a way for indie filmmakers, if you're listening to this podcast, to get a project, get it completed, because I don't know how many times I can go to parties, go to coffee shops, sit with friends, meet new people, and all they want to talk about is their project. You think, hey, that's great. And a year later, you go to a Christmas party or something, you meet them again, hey, how's it going? And next thing you know, they're still talking about the same project, and all of a sudden the light bulb goes off. Like, oh yeah, I remember you were talking about that last year. And it never gets done. I want to see you get your project done. I want to see you get your script produced. And in my opinion, the way you get it produced is creating a short, a proof of concept of the feature film script that you want to get done. Is it a comedy? Is it an action adventure? Is it a space alien film? Is it a zombie film? Horror films are very clicky. That is the genre of the day, the genre du jour. A lot of people like to create horror films, and every time I have a screenwriter pitch me a script, the first thing I ask them is what's the boogeyman and when do we see them? You can use Jaws as a perfect example. I don't know, two-thirds of the film, you don't even see the damn shark until at the very end. And Hitchcock used that technique so well, Steven Spielberg learned from that. And Hitchcock says it's not seeing the bomb with the fuse burning down like you would see in a Warner Brothers cartoon, an Acme, you know, bomb going off. It's the idea that the audience knows the bomb is there, the actors, the characters don't know it's there, and that creates the tension. So horror is a great genre if you're a first-time filmmaker. If you think that you're going to produce the next Paranormal Activity or the next Blair Witch Project, then you've got to take a reality check, because the people that produced those projects, one, had no clue they would ever take off the way it did. Without Paramount Pictures' involvement in Paranormal Activity, that film would not have taken off the way it did. Horror genres are a great genre. I love road films where you have, let's talk Thelma and Louise. You look back on Thelma and Louise, a lot of that could have been done on a low-budget, independent filmmaker kind of project. Granted that, you know, there's big explosions and there's a bunch of police cars and things like that. But think about it. That would have been a perfect little indie film that, on a shoestring budget, that could have been done. You could have rewritten a few scenes. If you're an indie filmmaker and you're thinking, what can I get done? Look for those kinds of projects. And I'm not saying you have to do a horror genre, and I'm not saying that you have to do a romantic comedy, or as the cool kids say, a rom-com, or you have to do an alien movie or a zombie movie. What I'm saying is, if you're going to be the filmmaker, whether you're going to be the actor, director, producer, or all of them, God forbid, find something, find a story that you like. If you're in the comedy and you think it's going to be funny, then don't go out and try to shoot a feature film, an entire feature. Go out and shoot a 7 to 10 minute reel, a proof of concept. Pull in some of the funny scenes that you think and adapt a smaller script out of that larger one. Later on down the road, you may find someone who gets interested. You may find an agent. You may find somebody calls you up and sees it and says, hey, I like that. What are you interested in? What are you interested in talking? Say it's an agent, okay? And generally speaking, it's the agent's third assistant that would call you. And you say, well, I did that because I have a feature film that I want to get produced. You may never, ever get that feature film produced, but that short reel that you did was your calling card to allow you as a producer, a director, a writer, cameraman, actor, or whatever, to go on to your next step. And if you look back and you think, wow, imagine the amount of money, time, and effort that I would have spent putting in this feature film. It may not have sold. I may have been able to produce my own DVDs, maybe put it online, video on demand, maybe get Netflix to pick it up or some of these other services, and I'm never going to get my money back on that or pay Aunt May back, and now I've got to pay her mortgage. I hope she dies soon. No, you would never think that. Now, would you? Trust me, I've had people in my career tell me that, and my eyes just pancake. If you look back and you think, wow, I didn't have to produce that feature film, there's a lot of things that you may not be able to get the opportunity to produce. If you're looking at a feature film, my advice is don't bite off more than you can chew, because a lot of the people you're going to be working with, some are going to be professionals, and some are going to be professionals who want to make the next step up. Let's say an assistant cameraman, or better yet, a gaffer, a chief lighting technician who's never shot their first film, but they want to. They know how to light, but they've worked with cameras a little bit, and they want to be able to shoot something. So they said, hey, I will put my sweat equity in this project. don't do a feature film off the bat because you're trying to get all these people to work for free. And generally speaking, you're going to be making them work for free. Don't make the rookie mistake of saying it's deferred. You have deferred compensation because 100.0% of every project I've ever seen in Hollywood in 30 years that's told me deferred compensation, either for myself or for my friends or people that I know, never, ever, ever got paid. Don't make that mistake because at the end of the day, a year or two goes by, those people are going to get pissed off at you because they didn't make any money or they weren't paid. They're going to be looking at, oh, you're willing to pay them a union rate for 30 days worth of work or shooting over an entire year and interest added on top of that if the film sells. And they're like, man, that's a nice little chunk of change. And then it never comes in. It just sours everything. And unfortunately, people do that. They advertise this is deferred. What's the catchphrase? Copy, credit, meals provided. Listen, you're going to give them a copy anyway, right? You're not going to have them come out and act in it or shoot something and not give them a copy. You're going to feed them. And trust me, as an indie filmmaker, your number one weapon to keep everybody happy is you better feed your crew very well. And I've never broken that rule. And every time I do a project, I make sure I feed my crew well. Because the one thing is, if they're getting paid a low rate, or they're not making anything at all, they'll appreciate good food. And if you're in Hollywood South and you're feeding people pizza, I worked on a student film where the filmmaker had pizza for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and by lunchtime everybody was gone. I don't know if he ever got his film completed. You feed your crew well. So bringing this back around, an indie filmmaker, you want to do that feature film, adapt that screenplay into a short project, a 7 to 10 minute project. Today, you have distribution avenues for you. You can put the film up on the internet and people can stream it for free. Now, you may not be able to make any money off of it. You've got a 7 to 10 minute project that people can watch. You're going to have the casual observer, your friends and your family who are going to go there and they're going to watch it. But you're also going to have people who are like the third assistant to some agent at some agency that scours the internet and YouTube looking for videos, and they look at something like, wow, that's pretty good. I just read an article the other day about a girl and her granny in New York had created some blog about dating, never done a film in their lives. The next thing you know is some agent called them up and says, yeah, we're going to make a TV pilot out of your blog. Really? You're kidding me? Well, go figure. If it's getting paid for, then it's getting paid for. That's my advice. The first thing is you're looking at the script. If it's a feature film, cut it down to adapt your script to a 7 to 10 minute screenplay and shoot that project, because everybody working on it is going to be putting in their sweat equity. They want to do something, whether it's the makeup, whether it's the lighting, it's the shooting, the acting, the directing, the producing, or even the writing. They want to be able to see their name up on the screen. And nowadays with Internet Movie Database, you're able to get a credit for your project if it gets put up there, and that's good to see. You can develop that portfolio, but you're putting a lot of sweat equity, a lot of people donating their time to get the project made. If you think people are doing the project because they love your vision and they're following you because you've convinced them that you're going to take them places, one, you're fooling yourself, and two, they're being fooled or they're allowing to be fooled. Don't do that to people. You know, be honest with them. If you're working with people who understand or have done other projects, explain to them, listen, this is not a passion project, but it's a project that we would like to get completed and done. And if it's a 7 to 10 minute short, you'll be able to put it up on the internet and everybody can look at it. Your friends can look at it. You can have your name in the credits if they're going to do the makeup or the hair or the wardrobe or whatever. So that's the first thing that you're going to be looking at as an indie filmmaker. So you have your feature film screenplay, and you're going to produce a proof of concept for prospective investors to do the feature film. That may be your end goal, but your short-term goal is to adapt that screenplay into a 7 to 10 minute script, get that produced, and get it polished, and get it finished. Trust me, by the time you finish production, you're going to get into editing, and you're going to have computer problems and file problems and camera problems and software problems. And next thing you know, you're just going to be fighting a battle and not be able to get your creative story out there. Now, I'm not saying that happens all the time, but as a general course of events, when you're producing a project, those problems do come up. Don't look at just trying to get an entire feature film produced. Produce your short project, your proof of concept for your prospective investors, or your reel for a website for all of your people who put in their sweat equity into your project. In the coming podcast, I'm going to pick up on this indie concept as an indie filmmaker, and we'll go on to the next step that once you've created this short 7 to 10 minute script that you've adapted from a feature screenplay. One of the popular avenues of getting funding for projects nowadays is crowdfunding, right? Kickstarter and Indiegogo. I've tested these services. I think they're fine. I just don't want to use them for my projects. However, I read a recent article in IndieWire by Jay Fernandez, October 12, 2012. If you're listening to this podcast when you're driving or at the gym or whatever, or riding around, don't worry, I'll have links at the website for everything, and you can go back and read these articles later. The title of the article is called "Crowdfunding Gets a Major Test Case. David Fincher Wants Your Money for the Goon." That's interesting. It says here, David Fincher has just dipped into the Kickstarter universe in an effort to raise money to push forward the adaptation of the comic book series The Goon that he's producing. Along with Blur Studio, Goon creator Eric Powell and his publisher, Dark Horse Entertainment, Fincher has launched an online crowdfunding campaign on Kickstarter to further develop the feature version of the popular comics he optioned a few years ago. The proof of concept reel they put together to sell the studios on the project has yet to convince anyone to take it to that level. Going back to this conversation that we just had about being an indie filmmaker and you selected a feature film script and you've adapted a 7 to 10 minute screenplay based upon that feature film script and now you've produced it, you've gone through all the hurdles as a producer, and congratulations, if you will, for doing that. Because it is not an easy task. It's not as easy as it looks. And once it's completed, now all of a sudden, no one wants to do anything with it. Nobody's interested. You've got it out there. You've spammed all your friends on Facebook and Twitter, and nobody cares about it. You have to move on to another project. That is another book that you put on your bookshelf for showing later on. In this instance, they called it straight up a proof of concept reel. A lot of people call them trailers, but if you're going to be a professional, let's talk about proof of concept. And who's doing it but none other than David Fincher, who directed The Curious Case of Benjamin Button. Everybody remembers that in Hollywood South, put a lot of people to work. And The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, the American version. Now, I didn't see the American version. I saw the Swedish version. I thought it was great, so I didn't necessarily see Fincher's version. But here you have someone who has worked in A-level game, at the A game, and he wants a Kickstarter campaign. So the filmmakers are looking to raise $400,000 to create a feature-length story reel. Now, I don't understand what they mean by feature-length story reel for $400,000. I know a lot of indie filmmakers that could say, I can make an entire feature film from start to finish with $400,000. And it has been successful for a lot of independent filmmakers. In fact, I know a lot of indie filmmakers that said if they could just get a steady flow of anywhere from $350,000 to $500,000 per project, that they can go from feature to feature to feature and be able to create a good revenue stream for their executive producers. I buy off on that business model, if you will. And never forget, this is show business. There is a business side and there's a show side. The show side is the creative side, that screenplay that you have, that adaptation of 7 to 10 minutes, that proof of concept reel, everything to be able to put into that. But there's a business side of it too. A lot of times, especially in this industry, you see one of two types of people. You see the creatives and you see the business people. And the creatives hate the business people because they won't give up the money. And the business people hate the creatives because they don't understand the money. And then you have some people who can understand both the creative and business. It takes an awfully long time to be able to develop those skills. You just don't get those overnight. Here's the key I found in this article. It says the major studios are getting away from the old school version of development that sucked up millions in cash working on ideas with writers, directors, and producers only to have them go nowhere. And that's the little dirty little secret. Dirty little secret maybe is not the right words, but that's the little secret behind the green curtain that nobody in the movie-going audience ever sees. And that's the millions and millions and millions of dollars that production companies, the mini majors, the smaller indie production companies, and I say the smaller indie ones, which are really huge, the major studios are not doing that anymore. They're realizing, man, we're spending millions of dollars, we're hiring writers, we're hiring directors, and we're hiring producers, and we're making them deals, and we're giving them 2 to 3 years to come up with something. Now, frequently you'll read in the trades that so-and-so has signed a 2-year, 3-year first look deal with Universal Pictures, and they're going to create some feature film or whatever, and they get some development money together, and they hire writers, and they work on scripts, and they spend 3 years, and at the end of the 3 years, they have a couple of scripts or whatever, and they say, we'd like to turn these into movies, and the studio system looks at it and says, yeah, we don't like any of that. So, we won't re-sign this contract. So all of a sudden, you spent 3 years trying to develop these scripts. You can't do anything with them. If you're a producer, generally speaking, the studios will allow you the rights to go shop them somewhere else. But those are the kinds of things that happen in the background, behind the green curtain, that nobody in the movie-going audience, or the general public, understands as far as the business sector. Now, here's the thing. The studios are cutting back on that. The TV networks, they're not even shooting pilots anymore. They're shooting the first episode and trying to get those first episodes going, and shows are getting greenlit. And some people are on edge thinking, you can't be doing that. You've got to be able to shoot these pilots. I can't remember the last statistic I saw, something like 300 or 400 pilots get shot every season. That number doesn't sound right. They get shot and nobody ever sees them. And that's how a lot of these studio executives work. They'll look at a film, screen a film that was never called to air, never put on the program schedule. Now the major studios are looking at it and say, God, we're going to cut back on that money. And some people may think, God, they're making billions of dollars a year and they're trying to cut back on pennies, if you will, of spending in development. Well, they're cutting money somewhere. And in this economy as it is, that's sure enough, that's what they're doing. They're cutting back on development. So you as an indie filmmaker have to be able to produce something. If you have a feature film, they may take a look at it. But trust me, you don't want to ever get that call where you spent the last 3 years of your life producing a feature film and nobody calls you back or nobody's interested in that. And you wonder, what are you going to do next? You're so dejected that you can't get the project bought. The major studios are getting away from that old school way of funding those projects that way. And David Fincher has decided to launch this program on Kickstarter. Why not? You know, the question is, why not go all the way with it and produce the entire movie independently? Why raise this money on Kickstarter? Go figure. The thing is that some people would argue, well, if David Fincher is going on Kickstarter trying to get money for his next project, and it's a comic book that he wants to be able to produce, The Goon, and he wants to be able to produce that into a feature, and according to this article, they're not even going to take that money and produce it into a feature. They're going to have a proof of concept reel to be able to produce this into a feature. Hey, it may pay off. You may have fanboys that and fangirls that make donations to the project, and they get it done. But a vast majority of these crowdfunding projects don't make their money at all. They don't even make anything close to what they need. I've seen projects up there for $1 million. They're trying to raise $1 million in 45 days and see if they can get people to donate. And I've seen projects up there for $1,000 to produce something. You know, somebody wants to produce a short film that get funded or don't get funded. I'm not trying to dissuade you from using Kickstarter or Indiegogo. I've tried it on 4 projects. I've done test cases. In fact, I even interviewed the CEO of one of those organizations, and so you got a 50-50 shot of figuring it out. And when I was talking to him, it became painfully obvious within the first 60 seconds that we started discussing their business model, if you will, that he had no clue how it worked, how the website worked, and how the process worked, the business model. I had to actually ask him for his business card in the middle of it to double check to say, am I talking to the CEO or did I accidentally talk to the CIO, the Chief Information Officer? Because he had no clue how the process worked. And while we were talking, he invited me to speak to somebody else who I started talking to her, and I thought she was with the company. And she turned out that she was an actress, not even an actress that had done anything, but someone who wanted to be an actress, an aspiring actress. And she had a crowdsourcing campaign. I'm trying not to use, it's either Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you figure it out. She had $1,500 goal that she wanted to put on her project, her campaign, and she raised that, and she used it to get headshots and do some video and buy some outfits and things like that. And he said, well, she could explain the process better to you. And I just stood there and I'm thinking, I just talked to the chief executive officer of either Kickstarter or Indiegogo, you figure it out, and he had no clue how the process worked. Granted, this is when these companies first started, and I was just flabbergasted, and I thought, well, why would you start a business like that? They make money off of the money that gets raised, different percentages based upon what comes in. Let's say David Fincher does get his $400,000, how much Kickstarter is going to take from that? Because, dirty little secret, you can go behind the doors and make an exclusive deal with them for them to take less, because the name David Fincher being tied into Kickstarter is a promotional advertisement for other people to get their programs on there. Is that the case in this instance? I have no facts to back that up, but I can tell you my spidey sense is telling me, there's a comic book reference there, my spidey sense is telling me that's exactly what happened. It's not costing him anything at all. It doesn't cost you anything as an indie filmmaker to use crowdsourcing, but remember, at the end of the day, Kickstarter and Indiegogo are going to take a percentage of the money that comes in, and the vast majority of these projects do not get financed. If you go to their front pages and look at their featured projects, you're going to see a lot of them that say, you know, 150% finance, 250% finance, 400% finance. And you think to yourself, wow, this is a great thing. I'm not telling you not to do it, but if you're going to spend your time and effort putting into the program, put together a nice little campaign, definitely shoot a trailer, do some interviews, put some interview footage up there, maybe with your actors or whatever, and describe what you're going to try to do. And don't go up there and try to get $150,000, $400,000 because you're not David Fincher. I mean, I hate to burst your bubble. Let's say you ask for $5,000 and that money is basically going to pay for food and catering, if you will, for shooting a trailer for your project you want to put up there. Here's the thing. Once you get it done, you're going to have to deliver on all those promises you just made, those faceless, nameless, if you will, donators, sponsors, whatever you want. They're going to want a DVD. They're going to want the t-shirt. They're going to want the soundtrack. They're going to want the flight out to Hollywood to see the premiere, whatever it happens to be. I'm not telling you don't do it, but if you do do it, put a good effort at it. If you get 100% finance, please write me because I want to take a look at your project. Here's the other little secret of crowdsourcing is once you get it put up there, you're going to fall into the trap of telling your family and friends on Facebook and on Twitter, and you're going to spam the hell out of them saying, please donate. It could just be a dollar. It could just be $5. And what I call digital panhandling. If you don't mind whatsoever going to your family and friends and digital panhandling them for a buck, $5, $20, $150, knock yourself out. What happens is I have found in my experience, and I have a couple of friends right now that have these projects up there that say to me that they're getting discouraged because all of a sudden their family and friends don't call them back and they're not talking to them anymore. And I think, well, I see your post on Facebook asking for money and click on this link and go to Kickstarter or go to Indiegogo. That's the pitfall, the trap that you can fall into as a small independent filmmaker, indie producer doing your first time project. at the end of the day, I'm not telling you not to use Kickstarter or Indiegogo. Try it, because if you don't try it, you're not going to get that experience of using it. And if you get your project financed, please write me, because I'd like to interview you and see how you went about doing it, because maybe your experience can help other people. Which leads me to one of the other final points that I have. As an indie filmmaker, an indie producer, and this is your first project, maybe your second or third project, one thing you're going to find out is that you're going to have other people, they're going to see your success and they're going to want to ask you, hey, how did you do it? Always help some other filmmaker in whatever need that they have. Let's say you are a director and you write, and you have an actor who you've wanted to work with, or they've wanted to work with you, and they ask you a question of how did you get your project produced? Well, I went to Kickstarter, I went to Indiegogo, things like that. Collaborate, work with them. You may not end up working on a project with them, but the conversations that you develop and the networking that you do goes a long way. So never forget that part of it is that everybody needed somebody else to help them out to get along the path. Even though that all their effort and energy they put into getting the script completed or the campaign started or the 7 to 10 minute proof of concept reel, at the end of the day, it may say produced by or written by or directed by, or it may be everything in your name. Always help out your fellow filmmaker, because you're going to learn a lot. You're going to make some great friends along the way, and you have a great network to be able to pull from. The 23rd Annual New Orleans Film Festival is in high swing. Definitely get out there and see some films, stuff that you're not going to see in the commercial theaters. You're going to see independent filmmakers. You're going to see documentaries and shorts. Definitely go out there and participate, because even if it's $10 and you see one film, or maybe you spend $100 or you buy some souvenirs or you buy some t-shirts or whatever, and you're supporting independent filmmakers, creative artists, all the way from the director, writer, producer, actors, all the way down, and you're supporting them in their efforts. Definitely get out there. Besides, it's the New Orleans Film Festival. My book recommendation, of course, you figured it out already, Adventures in the Screen Trade, A Personal View of Hollywood and Screenwriting by William Goldman. William Goldman, two-time Oscar winner for Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid and All the President's Men. Great scripts. It's about $20 or less. It's in paperback and you can get it on Amazon. My software recommendation, Story O by Jungle Software. If you figured it out, Jungle Software is a favorite of mine. It's $80, and think of it as digital index cards and a story-making platform where you can keep all your ideas and plot lines and outlines and material together in one digital format. You don't have to carry around colored index cards and rubber bands in your backpack or whatever. Now you can have files, digital files, and for $80, a cheap program, and create your stories. It's a great little index card. You can create index cards, different colors, and craft your stories, and even export it into Final Draft software. I'm not sure about the other ones, and use that for developing your stories. It's called Story O by Jungle Software. I've been using it for the past couple years. Great buy for around $80. We have free crew listings on the website. You can go there and apply for as many crew positions that you work at. Say you work behind the camera, you're an electrician, you're a grip, and you want to be able to put in ads for that. They're free. Fill out the form, it gets sent in, and the Crawfish and the Hollywood South Yacht team gets together and they throw that up on the website and makes a good gumbo. The Hollywood South Blacklist group, sign up for that on the website. Guess what? It's free. A lot of professionals and non-professionals that work in the industry, it's a great little collaborative tool. It's an email list that you can get on. You have a question, where to rent something, who's the best cameraman, where can you rent editing gear, what's a great location to shoot at for your project, questions that you can ask. The Hollywood South blog Facebook page, be sure to visit there and click like, because everybody likes likes, right? And if you have any show ideas, just email them to me and I'll take a look at them. So take a look at that screenplay you have sitting in front of you and ask yourself, why does this have to be made? What is it about that story that really grips you? And I wish you luck. Well, everybody, thanks for joining me on the Hollywood South Blacklist, where we've tried to discuss all things Hollywood South, a filmmaker's paradise. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, send us an email to podcast@thehollywoodsouthblog.com. And be sure to stop by the website and take a look around. We have all the links to all the show notes and everything we talked about. This is Stan Gill for the Hollywood South Blacklist. Thanks for listening.